Hello and welcome to the Mystic Cast, where you join Jack Stafford and Deborah Littleboy, members of the Aetherius Society, the cosmic religion for the Aquarian Age, as we break down the religion, science, metaphysics, philosophy, and mysticism, all of which are really only aspects of the selfsame quest for truth. Please note, this is an independent program not produced or fact-checked by the Aetherius Society. Today, our guest is Angel Miller. Hello, Angel.
Hey, how are you doing?
Sounds great to say hello, Angel. You must get that a lot.
Not as much as you would think.
So you're an Englishman in New York?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I grew up in England near Greenwich, and I've been here for 25 years, so I'm just getting acclimatized to it now.
And you're hypnotizing Americans?
Yes, some Americans I'm hypnotizing.
How did you get through passport control?
Yeah. Well, if it's a serious question, it's been a long journey through various visas to getting citizenship. So it's not easy, unfortunately. So.
No, great. Well, we were attracted to you because I think it was your writing in New Dawn magazine, which is subscribed to. And
great,
interesting article. I think you were writing about meditation, was that?
I've written a few articles for them, actually, and kind of forgotten what I might have written, but I know I did write one on hypnotism for them a little while ago. Hypnotism and the sort of mass hypnotizing of the culture.
And we also check in on your website about hypnosis and meditation. I think that's what Deborah was drawn to. This is Deborah, my co-host.
Right. Nice to meet you as well.
Thank you. Yeah, it was the hypnosis versus meditation that really took my eye, Angel. Because I noticed when I'd read through that you had started with meditation and then made your way to hypnosis, which seemed to me like most people were going the other way. And so I was, do you mind me just jumping in here, Dad? I was interested to know what meditation you were doing. You said you were doing it for 3 years or something like that, so considerable time. So what was it, what were you doing, and what made you if you like cross the bridge?
Well, I've actually been meditating for over 30 years at this point, so as you can imagine, over that time my own meditation evolved. You could say it was originally I was sort of focused more on chakra meditation, something a little more, maybe not strictly Hindu, but certainly, something more along the lines of, somewhere between chakra meditation and Israel Regardes, middle pillar, minus all the Hebrew. So focusing on these specific points in the body. And, I would do other types of meditation as well, such as awareness meditation and, focusing on the breath, like this kind of thing. But, and I certainly over the years experienced trance states doing meditation. But, for me, learning hypnotism was actually a kind of a big breakthrough. I'm not entirely sure why. A lot of people conflate hypnotism and meditation, or say that they're very similar. And from one respect, they are very similar. But for me personally, I've been able to go and now frequently go into much, much deeper states of trance than I ever have before. And that's, maybe people will think, well, maybe I wasn't going into very deep states of trance before. But, even when I first started practicing chakra meditation, I had experiences where I'd have, sort of brief blackouts, or, sort of fall asleep is quite the right word, but, where I'd be sitting in a chair and I notice I would just have a blackout for a couple of seconds or whatever. So I was definitely going deep into trance early on, but this is, hypnotism has been sort of taken it to another level, really, I would say. Which has sort of surprised me, really.
Is that because of your self-hypnosis then, or because of the treating people you're developing, or how is that working?
Yeah, well, when I learned hypnotism, I learned from a friend who's a a board-certified hypnotist with the National Guild of Hypnotists in America, and I learned in New York. I don't know if it interests your audience, but just to give a brief description. I mean, it was a kind of interesting experience in that there was only two other students in the class, and we were, you know, spend quite a bit of the day discussing hypnotism and quite a lot of the day actually hypnotizing each other. So it was actually the most relaxing experience of my life doing that. But almost felt like he must be on drugs or something by the end of the day. It was so relaxing. But what I noticed was it brought a lot of things in my life together. Because, you know, a part of hypnotizing other people is understanding language. You know, I'm a writer. I also edit a Masonic magazine called Fraternal Review. You know, I practiced Shaolin Kung Fu for a long time, and we would do things in the school that I was a member of that were pretty unusual, such as laying on a nail bed, you know, which is, you know, literally a bed of nails and concrete blocks on top of you, and which is, can be very painful. So you have to use your mental focus to not feel the pain. So, you know, things like this, and it kind of brought it all together in hypnotism. I think it may have been the introduction of language to meditation, whereas, you know, meditation as we think of it tends to be either more sort of visualizing or simply focusing on the breathing, or if there is any kind of language, maybe you feel a sensation in your arm or something, you mentally say to yourself sensation, or you hear a noise and you just say to yourself noise, so that you're not going along some train of thought, you kind of cut it off. But that's as far as it goes. Whereas with hypnotism, I mean, there are different ways of using language, of course, but you know, personally now with, let's say, self-hypnosis, I use language. So if I were to, let's say I were to feel a bit tense in my neck or something, instead of saying tension or sensation, I would say to myself mentally, my neck is relaxing, my body is relaxing. Or if I notice that my breathing is getting a little agitated, I would just say, you know, my breathing is slowing down, my breathing is becoming slower, I'm becoming more and more relaxed. So instead of just observing
it's like
it.
An affirmation, yeah.
Yeah, and it is curious that when you say these things, you just, especially if you say to yourself in a relaxed manner, even mentally, that you just slip into that, really. So I think that it may be the key to going into a deeper trance, actually, at least for me, but I would think probably for many other people as well.
Yeah, we have a lot of affirmations in the society, like I am at one with the divine spirit, which never fails. I'm one with the mighty power of God, which never fails. Yeah.
Mm.
I am now, I'm divine spirit. I'm becoming master of my mind and body. So we do a lot of that, and we repeat that with every breath.
Yeah.
So you've studied a lot of different things, the Kabbalah, Tanto, martial arts. Just for our audience, what did you think of the Aetherius Society when you came across it?
Yeah, so I will look more at it, but I did look at it, and you know, I read quite a few pages, and I thought it's definitely intriguing, and I was surprised that I'd never heard of it, and I was especially surprised, and you'll have to forgive me, but I've forgotten the name of the founder.
Dr. King.
One thing I really thought was interesting was that it was his mountaineering. And then maybe that seems like, you know, a trivial thing to be interested in, but, you know, Aleister Crowley is obviously a much more controversial occult figure. He was a mountaineer earlier on, and Julius Evola, another controversial occultist, was a mountaineer as well. And so then maybe there is something about mountaineering, and there's certainly something about doing physical exercise, in my opinion, as well, that's actually important, that can work together kind of holistically with the mind, you know, because a lot of people, unfortunately, will go off at a tangent, sort of forget about their body, which is not very, very healthy.
Mm. Dr. King was only a mountaineer for 2 years, approximately. Is that right, Deborah? Just to charge 19 holy mountains.
Yeah, 3 years and 1 month. And he did it not for pleasure. He did it because he was commanded to do so.
Oh, really? Yeah.
To charge these mountains, which are holy entities. So he had to physically go up to a spot that would then, they would then take a charge of energy through his body. Mm. There was no pleasure in any of this. In fact, he went in the most appalling conditions with no kit, so had no money. So it was just like, it was a one grueling, horrible event after another. But his determination was, because he was under orders to do it from the cosmic masters. It wasn't that he, you know, liked to climb mountains and sing Sound of Music, although he might have wanted to do that, but that was not the, you know, that wasn't it. But what he did say later is that he marveled at the balance of this, of charging these mountains, because what we can now do is, like Joe Bloggs and Mrs. Bloggs, we can go up to the two of these charge spots and we can actually tap into this energy, use ourselves as channels and send it out. And what you've just said, picking up on your point, to get to those charge spots, you have to walk up the mountain. So what you're actually doing is you're exercising your body. You're then you're using your body as a pure channel to send out the energy, which then goes out and through the world. So there is a very much a connection between being physically fit. And I mean, not talking about super fit. I mean, make so the body works properly. So you feed it properly and you breathe properly and you exercise it to a level. And then you go and do your spiritual work. So it was quite a... quite something. That was like the first mission that he was given to do. Took him all around the world, and and we're very thankful for it now. We go to pilgrimage three or four times a year to different mountains and send out energy. So
great. Yeah.
Well, I think we wanted to focus on, in each interview, we like to focus on one area of similarity between our teachings and our guests. And we're talking about hypnosis and meditation. So you had this very interesting blog article about hypnosis and meditation, which is on your website, angelmiller.com. People are welcome to check out. And how do you define meditation?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I suppose there are different types of meditation and different ideas about what it is. But I think generally it's a way of blocking out the world around you and being observant of your own, maybe not your own body necessarily, but your own sort of spirit or mind or presence, whatever it may be.
To what end?
Yeah, I suppose that depends on the meditation. So, for example, awareness meditation, which I don't really enjoy very much, where you just focus on the breathing, for example. I suppose, in a way, that's partly blocking out the sort of mental chatter that we have throughout, well, whenever we're conscious. And, partly training your concentration, and maybe it's partly entering a relaxed state as well. But, with something like chakra meditation, from my experience, I mean, it definitely lends more towards entering a kind of trance state. And I suppose many practitioners would also say that, at least in certain types of chakra and chakra-like meditations, then you're also cultivating and channeling a kind of inner energy through the body. And, some practitioners might want to do that for health. And then some other practitioners, if you look at Taoist inner alchemy, for example, they want to channel this energy to create a kind of spirit body, which will enable them to reach immortality. So, so those would be a couple of very different reasons for doing meditation.
Yeah, I think that the reason that we go into meditation is more aligned to your latter description there. Mm. What we we're following Dr. King, who went into the very highest states of samadhi trance, which is a positive trance state. So he didn't give his body over to any entity. He went into he was in control of it. So he controlled Kundalini up his body and with complete control. So as the energy moved up the back of his spine, he became paralyzed. So as he's opening up, because you needed the pressure to take it up to the next one and pressure to take it up to the next one. But it was all to reach the higher states of mind to bring down the higher sacred knowledge.
Right.
That's why we're following in his footsteps in that way. So concentration is key. And in fact, he says that if you can't concentrate on a keyhole for 3 hours without blinking, then you've not even started. Angel, I'm not even anywhere near that at all. But, you know, you live in home. So it's this focus of concentration that you have to get. And then we're told that once you really can hone in on that focus, you can then be at one with whatever you happen to pick up. So and then you get the messages, the vibrations back from this.
Contemplation, that's the next phase.
Yeah, so that's the next step of it. And we're told that when you're really very good at it, you not only can work out where what tree it grew on, which country it grew, what the ink was made of, and what right down to that, almost the pigments of everything that's in the book.
What was in the mind of the bookmaker when he made it?
What
he had for breakfast.
And then, of course, the next stage up from that is being able to control this sacred energy up the back of the spine and down again.
Yeah.
And then that's meditation, the third phase. So we have these three. So meditation, they say, is wrongly used on this planet, the word meditation, because meditation is a very high state. If you can meditate, you're well on the way.
Yeah, and you're bringing in these higher glimpses of like the highest knowledge that you can. You bring it down and then you're meant to be sharing it out. You're not meant to keep it to yourself. You're meant to then, hey guys, look what I found when I was up there, and here it all is. It's really interesting that you've done all the practices and you've got your experiences, and then you've moved across to help people. The whole thing I got from the whole of your site is that you're here to help the man next to you have a better life. I don't know whether I've got that right or wrong, but that's the whole. So everything you're doing is because you found a way of helping people. So if you can go through the hypnosis side with me, because I've only got a really limited bludgeon type understanding of it, like this stage shows where people sort of run around doing stupid things, and of course bad press. So if you could just explain how it can help somebody in the way you use it.
Sure. Yeah, so that probably is most people's conception or image of a hypnotist, right? Somebody on stage who's doing tricks with other people and making them do crazy things, and I've never done any kind of stage hypnotism. So, I know people who have, but I have no experience in that. But, so hypnotism and hypnotherapy are used for helping people in their daily life. I should probably say that in America, generally, there's considered to be a difference between a hypnotist and a hypnotherapist. Sometimes hypnotists are called consulting hypnotists. But so a hypnotherapist, you would need a degree in some kind of therapy or psychotherapy or psychoanalysis or something like that. But the process would otherwise be the same. But they would be working with people who have some kind of, mental illness or some kind of actual condition that needs to be diagnosed by a doctor. Whereas, a hypnotist would be mostly working with, or really working with people who have a sort of baseline of normality, but want to get over something that isn't sort of, doesn't sink to the level of some medical issue, or they want to improve themselves in some way. So it might be, a lot of people, a lot of hypnotists work with people who want to quit smoking. I tend to work with a lot of people who are interested in confidence or some kind of performance related. But in regards to the process, so the hypnotists actually very often develop their own different techniques. It's not always the same. And there are different schools of hypnotism as well, and mesmerism or magnetism from France. Anton Mesmer is a lot more physical, with sort of getting close up to people and maybe touching them in certain ways. I don't do that. But so I use language and speaking. So in a session, if I was in a session with someone, I would speak to them for quite a long time, and I would make mental notes about their use of language, how they respond to things. And, it's not just, it's partly the words they use, but it's also little things like if somebody switches from using the word I to saying you when they describe something, that tells me that they might be hiding something or not being honest with themselves. So things like that, the way people sort of instinctively use language to kind of cover things up or, to protect themselves. So I might probe that. And then in a sense, you're kind of dragging out or diving in to kind of find the sort of magic words of the individual. So, to use slightly crude terms, somebody might say that, well, I want to feel like a rock star, whereas somebody else might say, I want to feel like $1 million or something like that. And you want to sort of use those phrases because they're kind of symbolic phrases that they resonate with. So later on, once you get them into a state of hypnosis, you might say, you can see yourself and feel yourself, you feel like a rock star. You wouldn't want to say that to someone else that says, I'm going to feel like $1 million. So in a way, you're kind of trying to get their own magical language to use that with them when they're in a trance state and more susceptible to suggestion. But in regard to putting someone into a hypnosis, I do it through talking. I just get them to relax their entire body through different suggestions, and then get them to sort of relax their mind. I mean, that's happening at the same time anyway, and then just get them to go deeper into hypnosis, and then we'll begin speaking with them.
And are they awake the whole time, Angel?
Yeah. So the more relaxed someone gets, the deeper they'll go into a state of hypnosis. They're in a state which is comparable to maybe trance or like dreaming, but they are awake for most of the time. But some people will, and when I've been hypnotized, I've fallen asleep for a few seconds as well, maybe more than a few seconds. So it's not unusual that someone would, if you have someone in hypnosis for 30 minutes, that maybe a couple of minutes of that they actually do fall asleep. So
there's a line of parallel here, Jack, help me out, that we listen to the words we use in the society. We listen to what our colleagues are saying, and we correct each other gently. If, for example, I might say something like, oh, I'm always tired. But I'm always tired. I'm tired every day. And they go, why are you conditioning yourself to tell you you're giving yourself instructions, Deb, that you're tired every day? And you know what? You're really good at it, because what are you? You're tired every day. Or I've had this illness for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like you continue that chronic condition because you are automatically endorsing it, feeding it. So does that sound like the same type of thing that you're giving to me?
Definitely. Yeah, because as you probably realize, then a lot of those phrases are unconscious, really, aren't they? People don't actually ever stop to think about it. And you're in Britain, and I grew up in Great Britain. And I think, you know, when I was growing up anyway, you know, a phrase you would hear a lot is, you know, well, that is just my luck that something bad would happen. And so why is it your luck? What about all the good things that happen to you? And they're sort of programming themselves to think, well, I can't do what I want to do because I am a person who has bad luck and it won't work out. It's completely self-defeating and also not true. So yeah, this is, you know, this is the thing. People are very unconscious in their language, and they're very unconscious the way they go around the world, you know, saying these things to themselves that is very defeating or very negative for other people sometimes. So they don't realize that they are doing it. So yeah, and one of the, probably the first person that, well, the first person I know anyway who was made this connection was Emile Coué. He was a French hypnotist. I don't know if it's a big thing in England, but
Every day in every way.
Yeah, that's right. Every day
better
in every way.
Better and better.
Dr. King recommended that a lot.
Oh, really? Yeah. He came up with that phrase. Yeah. And Emile Coué realized that, you know, people were giving themselves auto-suggestions all the time. And he said, you know, the only way to combat this is to give yourself conscious auto-suggestions, because we're doing it unconsciously. So, and he was actually a pharmacist. And he realized that when he gave somebody medicine, if he spoke highly of it and said, oh, this is very effective, then it would have a much better effect than if he just gave someone the medicine. So he realized that, yeah, we're always programming ourselves all the time. So that's why he became interested in hypnotism.
Didn't he encourage mothers to sit up with their children when they were asleep and tell them something positive?
I don't know, but he might have, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I was reading this week, actually, a book. I forget the name of the authors, but a book on using hypnotism in medical emergencies. It's written for paramedics. But one thing that's interesting in it that I've read so far is that the authors actually say that even if someone is unconscious, you should still be going through the motions with your hypnotic speech and telling them everything's going to work out fine. You know, I'm a paramedic, I'm helping you, and I'm going to get you to the hospital. And they say that even when people are unconscious, this still has a positive effect. So, you know, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and one step on from that as well, when spiritual healing, if you do contact healing, if you're doing it with a good heart and an upbeat, even though you're not expressing it in words, but if you're thinking good thoughts, then it comes through the hands and the tactile of it. You get the response, you get this auto response, and if we smile, the what actually happens, all the little muscles in the face do send serotonin into the mind and makes you feel better.
Yeah.
So if you force yourself to smile, actually you're doing yourself some good, and then you can smile naturally because you feel good smiling. So there's a whole load of thing about programming this biological robot that we're all walking around in.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and the mind, that's right. You know, people forget that the mind and body are intimately related. Your thoughts are going to be translated into, you know, chemical reactions in the body. So,
yeah. And how does, I know that you did some NLP. I guess everything you've learned along the way gets put in the mix with what you feel intuitively you're needing to work with with the person that's come to help.
Yeah, actually, well,
how do you pick up on those intuitive cues?
Intuitive cues with other people.
Yeah. So, what am I going to do with this? How can I best help this person?
Right.
Now, yeah. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there, but it's really interesting to see how that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I should say that I haven't studied neuro-linguistic programming in any sort of official capacity. I've read about it. It's actually very similar to the kind of hypnotism that I practice, although there's obviously a much bigger emphasis on the actual hypnosis part. But I don't know if you know this, but it's kind of interesting. Essentially, NLP came out of hypnotism. I forget the name of the two founders. I think Grindr and something else. But they were studying hypnotherapy and hypnotism in, I think, in Berkeley, California, or somewhere in California. And they were doing lots of experiments with hypnotism, and they actually started doing experiments even with Carlos Castaneda's books, the techniques he had in there. They started practicing them on people, and they were trying to do all kinds of experiments in mind reading, at least if one history of that time is to be believed. And so it was quite wild and almost a very sort of esoteric and magical time, it would seem. But so they essentially studied hypnotists and hypnotherapists such as Milton Erickson, and then they kind of created neuro-linguistic programming out of that. But in regard to picking up on things Karen doing intuitively, you know, it is a lot of really listening to what people say and the way they say it. So I also tried to study language as well, and the use of language. I mean, partly because I'm a writer and an editor, but I'm very interested in the way that people use language, partly, you know, not only to express themselves, but to be deceptive as well. So, yeah. So it's really a lot of listening to what people say. But, you know, there are times, and this might be more what you're sort of getting at, there are times when I've had a session with someone, I've gone through all the talking and listening, and I don't quite know what I'm going to say. And what I found is that inevitably, once that person goes into trance, and I'm now extremely relaxed as well, I may not be in as deep a trance as they are, but I'm really relaxed. But once I enter this really relaxed state, I'll just get a flash of inspiration. I realize, oh, that's what it should be said. And pretty much always people say to me, oh, when you said that, that's what had the effect. So, you know, entering these states of consciousness, you know, on a very basic level, it's really good for, you know, repairing the body. A lot of people have severe stress and adrenal burnout, and it's extremely good for that, and for not developing health problems like as many people are today. But, you know, it's also good for things like inspiration as well. It's a different part of the mind seems to switch on. So you will get these flashes of inspiration that are beneficial. And even with my, self-hypnosis that I do every day, and I mean, it's very frequent. I mean, at least a few times a week that it will be not necessarily in the deepest moment of hypnosis, but coming in or going out of hypnosis, then I'll get some flash of inspiration that, oh yeah, that's the solution to what I've been thinking about. So and it's also extremely helpful for that as well.
Well, these are psychic abilities. Now, this is right. Intuition is your higher self, and you're opening yourself up to,
yeah,
you know, with all your practices you've done and being in, as you say, in such a relaxed state.
Yeah.
You're tapping
yeah,
into.
That's right. Yeah, if you don't mind me saying, if you look at the medieval period, there was a notion in Christian Europe. I'm not a Christian, but it was definitely Christian at the time. You know, Christian Europe, that there was a ratio in intellectus, and ratio was the sort of rational thinking as the workhorse of the mind. You solve things rationally by looking at it rationally. And then they also had this idea of intellectus, which was contemplation. So you might look at a landscape and just contemplate it without any thoughts. And the idea was that, well, this was created by God, so that now you're consuming the sort of the thoughts of the mind of God. And, and you can kind of see this in alternative spirituality or hypnosis or, you know, in religion as well, that it's not all just sort of logical, or it's not all just problem solving and sort of banging your head against a wall until you get the answer that you couldn't before by using this same way of thinking, that, you know, you do need to switch off and relax. And when you do that, you get these other sorts of inspiration for sure. And it was something that was known in the past, and now it's, you know, it's known by some people, but it's very much marginalized, right?
Well, we're all conditioned with the idea of the right brain and the left brain.
Yeah,
two hemispheres in the east and west,
yeah.
But And of course, that's also true. But in the 12 blessings channeled by Dr. King for the Master Jesus, all the prayers all talk about contact your higher self.
Right.
We pray that people may contact their higher selves. We pray that they can get guidance from their higher selves, that they act to their higher selves. So I think what the masters think is really missing is this awareness of a higher self and a lower self.
Yeah, so this, for sure.
This vertical integration, and that's what
that's right, definitely.
Missing with the esoteric teachings.
Yeah,
the way I think of it, it's like you've got to solve a problem. You can't solve it with the level that caused the problem. You need a higher, a wider, more integrated system, like a bigger computer. So you need more brain power. I need a bigger computer to solve the problems that the smaller computer has created for itself. And you do that as you've just said, by taking yourself to this level of stillness.
Yeah, that's right.
And then and then it comes in, because you're allowed, you're not blocking it with all the other with all the rubbish that you haven't put out in generations. It's so
intuition is never wrong, is it? Intuition is so high.
Yeah, and a lot of artists, writers, and creative geniuses have obviously recognized that this is part of the process, right? Salvador Dali, in particular, trying to cultivate the sort of hypnotic process, but other really well known creative individuals, probably most
flow,
creative individuals.
Yeah, you're in the flow state.
Yeah, that's right. And I've realized that there's once you relax, or maybe you get inspiration in a dream, or just laying down, or whatever it is, or going for a walk, these switching away from the rational mind or rationalizing mind is when you can get your best ideas there.
So do you help any of your people to do self hypnotize themselves? Is that part of your program?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people that come to me already do meditation, so I can just suggest that they focus on something in particular, or I might mention that, well, next time you do your awareness meditation, you can just, instead of saying sound or sensation, that you just say, I'm relaxing more, or whatever it may be. So I can sort of help people like that. If they really haven't had any experience in meditation, usually I'll tell someone, okay, well, when you're beginning to wake up in the morning, just visualize this certain thing that's relevant to your situation, visualize your future of overcoming this problem. Because at that point, you're still in the hypnopompic state, which is very similar to being in hypnosis. So usually I would tell them to do that.
Because we're told, there was a lovely lecture by our master that said, visualize success.
Right.
And it was all, it was about the only creative faculty we've actually got is our imagination. Mm-hmm. And we have to control it, because it needs that focus of control. But once we have got them, we can get all sorts of things. And that we have quite a few methods whereby we can look out into our auric envelope. So if you like a little bit of clairvoyance, see what's coming in, see how your mind is interpreting what's coming in. And then once you might not understand what you're actually seeing, but then when it turns up a day and a half later, you think, that's what was coming in. And then you've got that little bit of almost like a forewarning of it. So when it comes, it's not such a big shock. So then you don't get the knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
And you've been left, it almost gives you that beat to think, aha, that's what it is. So you become curious. That's what it is. What am I going to do with this now? As opposed to go into that automatic, non-thinking and away you go.
Yeah.
So it's bringing the unconscious into the conscious.
Right.
I'm understanding a lot more about the hypnosis and how our teachings fit together, because I've got to say, before before we sat down together, really, I was only really had the stage show view and and all the horrible things like brainwashing and you don't want to be going there and all those scare stories and knew somehow there had to be this common link. Because if people are doing good, then there has to be that link. You've just got to find that the different words and the different ways of finding it. You've really helped me with that. So
thank you.
Thank you, Angel. Hey, it's nice to say it. I like that saying that. Do you know?
I do too.
I'd like to phone you up every day and just say, thank you, Angel, and hello, Angel. I think your mum and dad did a great thing by you there.
Yes, maybe.
We've almost out of time. I wanted to talk about all your other books as well and your interests in... But we haven't got time. I mean, just to quickly gloss over them. I mean, the Crescent and the Compass, Islam, Freemasonry, Esotericism, and Revolution in the Modern Age. Try saying that 10 times, Deborah.
Yeah.
No way.
You have very broad interests and you're a very well-educated man. And so...
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, when you have your next book, you must come on and give us an exclusive interview.
Yeah, I've just finished a new one and sent it to the publisher. So I have to wait to see what they think, see if they like it or not. So,
what area of the pitch does that cover?
So it's about self-development in an age of uncertainty and change and chaos. And there's a little bit of hypnotism in there, or self-hypnotism, but it goes into all kinds of other areas as well, from confidence to the use of language and how it's used in life and how you can use it in self-talk. So, partly so that you can understand how you're being manipulated and partly so that you can, have this self-talk that's correct as well and empowering and not disempowering. And then I look at creativity and other things that we're going to need in the in the coming years that might be on decline right now. So, yeah.
That was interesting. Deborah mentioned it, just kind of glossed over it, that imagination is man's only creative faculty.
Yeah, with the imagination.
Is your only creative faculty. That really is something you can take into the silence. And because when I'm, I'm talking to you now through someone else's imagination. Someone imagined this. I drive to town across a road, across the street. Yeah. It was, people have died now, but I'm still living in their old imagination. And
That's right.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's important. And the imagination really is important to cultivate as well. And I think, a lot of people, when they practice meditation, they get into visualization, which is, which is good for, it's good for stilling the mind and it's good for developing concentration. But at the same time, you also want to develop imagination. I think that's where you get these sort of, as you're saying, these things that kind of come through. It's not from the visualization, it's from the imagination, especially when you're in a trance state and it just seems to be occurring. So
I guess it's different. Imagination you're kind of controlling, and then visualization you're controlling, and affirmations you're controlling, but then you open yourself up to receive.
That
can be intuition. And then so I guess there's only two ways, in or out, so everything's got to be one of them.
that's right, definitely.
So people can find out more about you from your website, angelmiller.com?
Yes, Angel Miller, AR at the end. Trips everyone up.
And where else? How else is good to follow you?
That's really it, actually. I pretty much have everything there. Or if, if someone has a particular question, they can always just email me through the website. I'll be happy to answer.
And do you do online consultations or it's only in person?
Yeah. In fact, I do pretty much all online,
Okay. You have very hypnotic eyes. I feel like I'm...
Thank you very much.
Not the voice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that helps when you're doing hypnotism, so...
Yeah. It's good for you to be a podcaster, too.
Yes, maybe, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks so much for chatting to us. And if people are interested in the Aetherius Society, they can go to aetherius.org. And we're also on all social medias.
Great. And next time I'm in London, I will try and drop by as well, actually.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Please do.
Great.
Let me know. Give you a show around.
Yeah, great. Great. Thank you. And it's been very nice meeting you both and talking with you. And you both have great voices as well.
Thank you very much. All right, Angel. Catch you next time. Come back and talk to us when the next one's out.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.